the midweek drive, zooming into the future and energized by the now.
One of the most magical things that probably exists in this thing we call life is the ability to read. And that is something which should be nurtured very much from a young age. Certainly, it's, I think, a vital part of one's development, whatever one's particular stage, etc. The ability to escape into a novel, into a book, into a time machine, really, hearing the words of a different person from across the ages, the generations, and so on. Indeed, more than a quarter of people in the UK say that some of their fondest memories as a child include reading over the summer. However, with all of the online gaming material that's around there, all of the other activities, etc., we still have one or two challenges with respect to this, with nearly half of those adults surveyed saying that children need to do more reading simply for the pure joy of reading. And to actually address this, we're delighted to welcome from the joys of King's Inter High, the head of the primary school at King's Inter High, Dr. Penny Alston. How are you, Penny?
Oh, thank you, Alex, for that warm welcome. I'm very good indeed. Thank you for having me this morning.
Good. So, Penny, what were your early memories as a child of reading? What texts were you introduced to which you thought, you know, if I hadn't actually read that particular novel, I wouldn't have actually been triggered off into this particular role?
Absolutely. I think the joy of reading started quite late for me when a librarian at the school took me aside and said, I just couldn't find a book to read. I didn't know what to read. And this wonderful librarian took me aside and said, try Douglas Bader, which was a story of an Air Force pilot in the Second World War. And it hooked me. And from then on, I realized I enjoyed reading a lot of nonfiction. And I think I got hooked in by that book. That is my memory. But prior to that, as a little girl, I loved the twins at Mallory Towers, the Nancy Drew, the Hardy Boys, the Secret Seven. And then I think your stance to reading changes a little bit as you grow older. And it was that librarian that hooked me in to nonfiction. And I've enjoyed it ever since. You learn so much, don't you, from reading a book. It inspires you sometimes to try new things.
Well, that was certainly somebody who followed the line of the Secret Seven and indeed the C.S. Lewis Narnia books as well, but also possibly because of a generational thing. I was often fascinated by the novelization of television programs such as Doctor Who and various other areas. So that also really embedded a love of reading in myself. But how important actually is reading to a young person's development? I mean, Penny, we hear a great deal about obviously new modes of education, new modes of development. It's all online now. We can actually simply access details from that point of view. We use arguably this whole notion of images so often with our TikTok videos, with our emojis, with our happy faces and so on. How, again, important, as I say, for that development, for that sort of child's development, is actually embedding oneself in a good text?
Absolutely. That's a great question, Alex. You know, the more you read, the more a child's vocabulary grows, along with the ability to communicate effectively. And additionally, reading, immersing yourself in a book, improves writing skills by helping the reader understand and learn different writing styles. But apart from that, from a pedagogic point of view, we are developing skills within our children to read for and search for simple information. We are embedding skills, showing children how to read, to skim read quickly, how to learn from the text, how to integrate information that they're reading, reading to write, as I said earlier, reading to critique text, and reading for general comprehension. So these are huge skills that our teachers explicitly understand that they are responsible for developing and nurturing throughout a student's educational journey. And I think that sums up the importance of reading for children and immersing yourself in a book. As you said earlier, children who love to read get to feel the joy that of being lost in a good book. It's like the real world falls away and the child is inside the story and gets to experience the adventures right along with the characters. In fact, to the child, it feels like he or she is the main character, like you and I did in The Secret Seven or The Twins at Mallory Towers or The Nancy Drew or The Hardy Boy series. We couldn't get enough of it.
And allowing for that, I suppose the most significant game changer over the last few decades was probably the Harry Potter series in terms of really encouraging people to connect with books and to connect with authors and so on. Does it matter these days how children read? I mean, whether it's a comic magazine, a physical aspect, whether it's an online source through Kindle or tablet devices, etc., or is the medium by which people actually read secondary to actually engaging with the reading process itself?
Spot on there, Alex. It is the second answer is, sorry, I'm messing up. Spot on there, Alex. You're quite right. You know, e-books offer convenience and accessibility, but physical books continue to be a wonderful resource. But whatever the format that helps our children read as much as they want is certainly good for them. So generally speaking, reading print books or e-books is down to personal preference. There's no clear superiority of one format over another. And you know, children's traditional storytelling books are still an option for children, but today these interactive stories are becoming a trend that encourages our young readers to engage with the story in different ways. And these could include augmented reality, it could include interactive illustrations. And as we know from years gone by, there's also choose your own adventure, which means you can reread the book and have a different ending all the time. But coming back to reading, it doesn't necessarily have to be that we go to a library to take out a book. It could be following a recipe in a no-bake challenge that we had at school the summer holiday. It could be learning to tie-dye a t-shirt and following instructions in that way. It could also be children going to a library in their local area and listening to a story being read. It could also be things like reading out loud, parents modeling reading, reading out loud, reading to or with their children, picking up a book at home of photographs and having a discussion around the illustrations in a book. Also, it could be books that are lying around on coffee tables or in nooks and crannies at home where children can pick those up and have a conversation with parents. So, parents and carers can be quite inventive in how they could encourage reading at home.
And clearly, there are lots of texts that are actually out there. I'll avoid any mention of ChatGPT because that's another line entirely. And arguably, if we actually get to a stage where robots are actually writing the books for our robotic children to actually read, then maybe we're taking the wrong route somehow. But that's another philosophical debate.
It is.
Where can people find out further details, Penny, about the research from King's Interhigh, and maybe some tips, as you've just said, about the ways in which you can use lots of ways to encourage that love of reading.
Absolutely, Alex. Listeners are most welcome to go to our website, kingsinterhigh.co.uk, and of course, we'd be happy to answer any questions they might have.
And in terms of your love of the early texts that you look for, are you still passionately committed to them today, or is it a case of, because I mean that's something again about reading. I've often said to students that you might read a book, let's take the C.S. Lewis Narnia series, when you're 10 or 11, you read it again 10 years later, 20 years later, and so on. It gives you a whole different insight into the author's writing. Are there any that still resonate for yourself, Penny?
Oh, Alex, it's wonderful. You know, I'm in English lessons in and out all day, and I marvel at how the children are enjoying the text, and I'm enjoying them again too. And one of the books that the children are relishing at the moment is a poetry called The Lost Words. And it's wonderful to reread these poems, but from a different perspective. And I think a good book can entertain adults at the same time that it does children. So yes, I am enjoying listening and to the children's discussion in lessons, in literature lessons, around good old favourites that which we enjoyed long ago. And Roald Dahl springs to mind. You know, it's endlessly entertaining and produces lots and lots of giggles in class.
Absolutely, endlessly entertaining, although perhaps these days open to a lot of debate with respect to context. But again, that's another issue for another time.
It
Dr.
is,
Pe
and I. Sorry, it is, and I wondered if I should bring up that one, Alex,
Well,
but you can cut
it's
that out.
okay. It's fine. We shall actually deal with giant peaches and other things in the fullness of time, no
Yes.
doubt.
Oh, lovely.
Dr. Penny Alston, head of primary school at King's Interhigh, many thanks indeed, and keep on reading.
Oh, thank you. It's been lovely to chat to you.
What is the situation in Edinburgh? The only person we can really turn to find out about this has to be, of course, our main Edinburgh correspondent, who hasn't been, as far as I'm aware, cancelled as yet, although you never know. Second by second, day by day, William Coles, what's this about? And why is it that the most amusing comment that we actually had, the one-liner from Lorna Rose Treen, according to Dave, is, "I started dating a zookeeper, but it turned out he was a cheater." I mean, this is not good.
I saw these gags about the German with celiac. What do Germans with celiac say to each other in the morning? Guten Tag. And I'm thinking these are not really A-grade jokes. I mean, they're not even dad jokes.
Yep. This is true. I mean, let's turn to Madrid. Luke Carradine, is something lost in translation when we actually say something along the lines of, "The most British thing I've ever heard, a lady who said, 'Well, I'm sorry, but I don't apologize.'"
Oh yes, absolutely. I don't think you could translate that effectively to any Latin language.
No.
It's tied to culture, isn't it? You just there are things that are so tough to translate. You know, I had a huge problem. I'm now reading a Russian book. No, sorry, a Ukrainian book. I bought it in Los Angeles. And I was so unhappy with the translation, I was about to throw it away. And then I realized that it's been translated 10 times by 10 different people because it's just so tough, they can't get it right. And it's a classic.
I mean, William, is this the challenge? It's lost in translation.
Maybe that is the problem. Yeah, maybe we should learn more languages so that we can read everything in the original.
Or perhaps we're just not having the same sense of humor that we had to, and that's a different line entirely. Nevertheless, great news, because not only do we have Chloe Rose back on the program with us, but we also have, you may have heard him already there with his wonderful line about lost in translation, spot on and punctual, as he always is, of course, in most cases, Luke Carradine, composer, producer extraordinaire. And congratulations, Luke, because the Toronto Film Festival are screening Dovzhenko's Earth with your new film score on Thursday, the 24th of August. So well done as far as that's
That's
concerned.
tomorrow,
Well,
Alex. Tomorrow, that's tomorrow, and you will be there, right?
do you know, if only I wasn't concerned, as indeed the Prince of Wales is, about carbon footprint, I would have been instantly on the
What
Siren radio jet, flying over there, using a time travel device
a
and
brilliant
subsequently.
exit! What a brilliant exit! A
Oh.
genius.
Yeah, well, it's either that or a Brexit, but let's not go there. We've had enough. Luke, are you in Madrid at present? Where do we find you?
It's very hot. It's very hot. We had the 43 Celsius on the streets just an hour ago. So I'm in the park chilling.
Well, that makes
Well,
sense.
I'm
I mean, it makes.
actually 50 meters from where Almodóvar lives. He lives there in that almost in that tower that you see there in the background.
That is Pedro's base. We can actually see
We've been there a
Pedro
couple of times.
Almodovar, great Spanish filmmaker, of course, literally privileged to actually just be not too far away from Luke, where Luke Carradine is doing a link up for the Madrid Drive. Excellent stuff. Okay, so let's just set our generic things here. We've got William Coles in Edinburgh, Scotland. Temperature okay in Edinburgh, William?
Temperature's fine. Yes, a balmy 16 degrees, I reckon.
Okay, Victoria Simmons in somewhere in the southern regions of France, which I never quite managed to recall. How's the temperature out there?
Last time I looked, it was 35.
Yeah, so
Not
cooler
bad.
than Madrid, clearly. Jessica Burtis in North Carolina. Temperature in North Carolina, Jessica?
It's been anywhere from like 35 to 40.
Changeable. Much
Not
like the
bad.
president. Never mind. And Chloe Rhodes, Rose, of course, in Cleethorpes slash Grimsby. How's life in Cleethorpes, Grimsby, Chloe?
It's good. It's not too bad at the moment. There's some cloudy skies coming through, and that means that on the weekend it may be possibly raining, but we'll find out. Hopefully not.
Well, it just works that. Now, we've already heard, in fact, we launched this sequence with our Shot You Down your latest single release, Chloe, or indeed just Shot You Down. Luke will have a chance to actually listen to this probably just before he actually goes into the official film premiere of Dovzhenko's Earth. Will you be going there yourself, by the way, Luke?
No. We were there. I was there in America, in the States, as we covered last week, in Los Angeles, to conduct the same score at the Film Academy. But this time I'm staying home. So I've sent them the recording, and that should do.
Well, again, it's clearly the way forward for the Toronto Film Festival. Talk to us about Dovzhenko's Earth. Is it something which still resonates, even though it was first made in 1930, with our current climate challenges?
That's a good question, actually. The film is larger than that. It covers many different themes and many different conflicts, as I like to call them. And one of them being, of course, the environmental one, but there's much more in it, like collectivization and many other things. Now, the first question is whether it resonates. I am spoiled at that because, of course, this is my crowd. It's my crew. When I go to the cinemas or the theaters to perform the music, the people that are there, they know what they came to watch and see and experience. So they all know it and love it. What I would tell you, though, that I have had conversations with some who didn't, and they were extremely moved by it. And I would say by extremely, I would say much more than what you expect from your regular Netflix series, just by watching a Netflix film these days, which probably moves very few people anymore. So their emotional reaction to it, it's much more intense. And I think that's a good thing. A lot of people find it refreshing to experience cinema in such a powerful way. Like, we've lost that sense of cinema a long time.
And as a film composer, were you approached by the filmmakers to say, look, we've got this 1930 events that take place, we want to actually have a new, completely new film score for it? Or was it a case of you put a bid in for it? What was the process, Luke?
Well, me and my wife, Katerina, who you've interviewed in the past, I remember, we run a cultural organization which promotes Ukrainian culture, film, music, and many other things, education as well. And she was in touch with the Toronto Film Festival. Actually, the Toronto Film Festival wants to come to us and say, we love to have this over here. And it was them actually who got us in touch with the Motion Picture Academy in Los Angeles, who immediately jumped at the opportunity to actually have a live performance of the score. It took a while. All this process took about a year to put together from beginning to end. So it was our association, the youth, we are called Youth Face, Ukrainians for the Arts, Culture and Education, who basically put it together. And there are there's a lot of interest actually for it. And we close in dates all the time for this year in different festivals of different sizes. There's a festival specializing in silent film cinema in Glasgow, name I forgot because they got in touch this morning, and they want it as well. They want the live performance, so we'll be there sometime in February, I think. So yeah, there's a lot coming up.
Excellent. It'll be February 2024. Well, we also will be remiss not to actually congratulate India on beating the place that we refer to as Putin's land. No, sorry, obviously, to all the Russians there, in terms of successfully having a soft landing on the moon's south pole with Chandrayaan 3. Victoria, any thoughts on that little moon landing? Or is it a case of no? I'm too concerned with celebrating National Phil Day in honor of our very own Phil Leonis, who couldn't join us at this moment.
I would go for the first option, but I would be more concerned about keeping the cats healthy when it's so hot at the cat shelter that I volunteer at. So,
well,
happened to be more important.
Exactly. So, keeping the cats cool, more important than actually either National Phil Day or indeed India successfully landing on the moon. William, any thoughts from yourself in terms of this sort of globe? I mean, we've moved from obviously the lack of humour at the Edinburgh Festival tendency to be cancelled and so on, right the way through to obviously this film festival, etc. Any thoughts from yourself?
Yes, can I ask Luke how he actually goes about composing a tune for a film? Because for me, it seems like it would be completely impossible to even know where to start. What is the sort of process?
I got asked this same question. I was so ready for it only 2 hours ago. There's a lovely chap who asked the same, similar to what you've asked. And my answer to that is that it all starts with the film. I think the composer has to have enough emotional empathy with the material that he watches to be in depth, emotional depth, if you like, for lack of a better term, to be able to get inspiration from that. If you're a film composer, if you're actually a composer of absolute music, as we call it the Stravinsky guy or the whatever, you know, then the inspiration would come from another place, would come from inside you and whatever else. But as far as film is concerned, inspiration is very much connected to with empathy, with connecting with what's going on with the characters, the arcs, the drama those characters go through, and then start to resonate. Then something happens inside of you, and you just go to the keyboard and go like, "Yeah, I know how this feels, and I'm going to write that in music this way." And that's when the magic happens. So, yeah, that's
wow, astonishing. Yeah. It's what a gift.
Well, we have two other musicians and composers with us, of course. So let's put the same question to Victoria. I mean, you haven't done some film music, etc., but is that how you go about composing?
So at the moment, I've done a few songs that I've written that I had to use the words first. I actually wrote a letter or a whole document and then took pieces of that to actually write the song because it was so personal. But other times I've actually gone to piano, thought about the subject matter and just started playing. And then something somehow comes around, and it's a very odd process.
I like to think, adding to what you just said, sorry, I get cut off, but I wanted to get your opinion on that, whether sometimes you get the impression that you're some sort of antenna for something else going on, and our function is just to connect something up there with something down here. And at least it happens to me that once the process is done and I go back to the music, I'm like scratching my head and think, how the hell did I do that? You know, does it happen to you?
One of the songs, I actually woke up in the morning and I was singing it, or at least the first few lines. And the lines were there, all the music was in my head, so I had to just go and put it down. It was really strange.
Good.
And the other, otherwise, when I'm on the piano, I actually close my eyes and just see where it takes me.
Very good. I like that.
And Chloe, share with us your process in the songwriting scenario.
Yeah, it sometimes depends, really, because if there's something that I've gone through and I've experienced, I sometimes feel like writing that down on paper, writing the lyrics down, and it sometimes makes me feel better, and it's a way of expressing myself, I guess. And then what I start to do, which was similar to what Victoria was saying, is I'll sit on the keyboard and I'll just start playing around with a few chords. And instead of using lyrics first that I've written down, I'll start to sort of hum a melody. And if those lyrics fit, I'll use them. But if I come up with something completely different and it's another song, I'll go with that. But usually it's a spark of inspiration. So it's not like... it's not like I'm going to write this song today. It sometimes just comes to me, which is so bizarre, but that's the excitement of it. You never really know how even a song's going to turn out. You know, you might write a song and it might completely change. But I love to hear everyone's thoughts on it, your thoughts, Luke, Victoria's thoughts, and everyone, really. It's just, you know, to see how it happens. I don't know. I just love it, the whole process.
You know, there's a documentary on YouTube about how the band, the Norwegian band A-ha, put together that classic Take on Me.
Like yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure that it applies to hundreds of other famous songs, but from the idea, the inception of it, to what we actually know the song for, that was a magnificent transformation. And then you go and think, what's actually then inspiration? I mean, there's a sparkle at the beginning which makes the songwriters do what they do, but the great product that we've heard at the end, like in the Beatles, it happened a lot, like how George Martin, who was external to the process, was affecting what they were doing, and they themselves bettering each other in taking turns and everything else. It makes you think how much, like Picasso was saying, with Picasso, they were many times they asked him, Maestro, what about inspiration? Where is it all coming from? And he famously used to reply, inspiration, I only know about the work. So this sense of bettering, improving, polishing, and getting good at the sense of craft, I think it's very important in the whole conversation.
Opens up a whole range of things. Okay, we've been joined. That's basically from our Edinburgh, North Carolina, Spanish, Cleethorpes, and French correspondence by Anna Lewis, who's somewhere in London, probably moving around even as we speak, basically, in that sort of area. Anna, where exactly are you currently in London, and what sort of things or graveyards have you been visiting this week?
Well, nothing too much this week. It's been a bit of a quiet one, really, and today's extremely hot. It's 26 degrees here in London. I'm planning to go to Kew on Friday. Kew, not the National Archive to work, but Kew Gardens, which should be in a nice state of floral abundance.
Well,
so what's happening on Friday, and I hope everyone else as well.
Well, you know, we're bearing up after, say, some of those jokes that came through from the Edinburgh Festival. I mean, the line about my grandmother describes herself as being in her twilight years, which I love because they're great films. I mean, these are not amusing lines, really. You know, still, although I don't know, Jessica gave a smile from that point of view. Jessica, any general questions you'd like to put to the team for this August Day, or do you want to return back to National Phil Day in honor of Phil Dearness?
Oh, well, no, I am very curious about National Phil Day. What is this? What's going on? How can we celebrate Phil? What's our tradition?
This is an excellent question, because I simply received a message from the Lyonesse Maestro, of course, known director and indeed filmmaker, who actually sort of raised the point about today apparently being National Phil Day. And if we know a Phil, if anybody knows a Phil, we should show them how much we appreciate them today. This is PHIL from that point of view. He also added the rejoinder, will we mention this today on Siren Radio in Lincoln? Well, we just have, and have mentioned it several times. I mean, William, National Phil Day? I mean, is there a National Bill Day?
Not that I know of, no. St. William's Day? Nope. Don't think so.
I mean, is there a National Luke Day? I mean, obviously there's a Saint Luke Day, there's a feast day for Saint Luke, but I don't think there's a National Luke Day.
That would be horrible, wouldn't it? What a waste of space.
Nonsense, but I mean, is there a National Jessica Day, a National Victoria Day, a National Chloe Day, a National Anna Day? I mean, what is this with Phil? Yeah, it's a question. Chloe,
Alex, sorry to interrupt you. You know that today I don't know why, just European, but anyway, probably, I hope it will go world one day, but it's the European Day for the end of authoritarian and totalitarian regimes. I know because we went to an event at the embassy here this morning, and it was mentioned, actually. I was quite moved. That includes both totalitarian regimes from the left and the right. So that's definitely better than Luke's Day.
Or indeed, I have to say, you know, an end to totalitarian regimes day, courtesy of the European Union, which is wondrous. Jessica, as I said, any questions or thoughts you'd like to put to the team?
Well, now that it's about to be September, I'm really curious about what projects everyone's working on or what everyone's looking forward to now that we're transitioning into autumn soon.
William.
I am looking forward to being doing more linesman work. I'm a tennis linesman, amongst many other things, and I've now just been promoted to be a chair umpire, so I can now chair matches, and I can get bullied by 12-year-old boys, which is what happened 2 weeks ago. Yeah,
Oh
these
my God.
four 12-year-old boys were beating up on me. It was horrendous.
Oh my God.
I mean, was this because they were engaging their inner McEnroes or their inner Nick Kyrgiouses? I mean, what was the challenge? Did they need help?
It was their inner McEnroes, and they just thought, who's this old fool on the chair who doesn't know what the hell he's doing? And I'm afraid they were probably right. And I was heartily relieved to eventually get off the chair and back into in with the other umpires and normal human beings. 12-year-olds, who knew? They're horrendous.
So, I
They
mean,
all ganged up on me.
were you caught calling balls out that were in? Were there marginal calls? What was the issue?
Exactly. That's the one. And getting the score occasionally wrong. And yes, it's all these things. As the chief umpire said, he'd been watching. He said, "Yes, I'm afraid very quickly you lost credibility."
Wow. Umpires losing credibility. Who'd have thought it? Victoria, any consideration for tennis umpires, or to get take aboard Jessica's question, are you already prepping for exciting times?
Definitely prepping. Definitely prepping, but it won't be anything that happens in September. But I did just look up for a National Victoria Day because you have to do these things. And apparently the National Victoria Day is a Canadian public holiday on the 25th of May.
I think that probably owes a
I
lot
suppose there
to.
may be quite a few considering there's a Queen Victoria, so
Yeah, I think that there might be a connection there with imperial pasts and various other things, and no doubt it'll be cancelled next year for that reason. Chloe, any thoughts for yourself? Where are you heading off to? Or is it a case of, well, the new school term is approaching, and whilst I always want to actually do more film music, I'd like to actually sort of focus on my education as well.
Well, it's going to be a mixture of all sorts, but with Victoria saying about National Victoria Day, my birthday is on the 25th of May, so I'll be able to celebrate Victoria as well. There is a Kate Bush Day with Wuthering Heights. I'm sure she does one because I love Kate Bush. I just had to say that. In terms of going back into education, it's happening. The planning is being sorted. I've had a nice rest, but I feel like I need to get back into work with the kids. But the last single I just put out, Shot You Down, it was produced by Aaron Bixby. So I will be working with him in the next week or so. I'm going to be writing some more music. He'll be producing it. So, yes, there is still more music to come. I'm excited. Woo!
Excellent. And Luke, what advice would you actually have for Chloe in terms of getting some of her music actually onto a motion picture? Should she just write off to the Bronze people, Mr. Broccoli's company, or Miss Broccoli's Barbara Wilson's company these days, of course? What's the process?
Absolutely not. I think that the only way to get into the entertainment industry, whether it's film, music, whatever, theater, is to actually hang out with the guys who are making the decision makers. So you've got to go to the markets, you've got to go to the festivals, you've got to go to the bars at the festivals, you've got to go to the conventions, wherever they are, and just hang out. Any shortcut to that? And I've tried, believe me, I've tried. I wish it
And
would have.
succeeded,
I
Luke. You've had quite a
had
constant,
better.
you had a good career. It's still going.
Yeah, but it's only worked when I actually got my ass off the chair and went there to talk to the guys and get people excited after, and make an impression on people. And that impression just stays. And if people like you, they will work with you. And I wish it would be different. I've been scratching my head on with this question for 25 years. And in those days, we used to send tapes of the record companies. You remember he was popular, just sent to the AR guy, who was the guy picking up acts in those days. I think that they're now extinct. But in those days, you would send a tape, put it on the post, and hope they would call you. It was just completely wrong. It just never worked. You know, you had to go and gig. You had to get an audience. You had to get people excited. It's just...
Never give up, never surrender, and avoid the artists and repertoire people because they're now extinct. Anna, what will you be doing in September?
Probably carrying on my project with Lieutenant Colonel William Booth of the Royal Arts Engineers, who's taken up the last few months of my life at the archive. I'm hoping to get in touch with Gibraltar Museum to see what they've got on him there. They don't sound to be a very helpful bunch from what I've heard, but... if there are any Gibraltese people listening, I'm very sorry to say this, but I'm hoping I'll get a nice response from them on this project.
Well, we'll put you in touch with our Gibraltar correspondent, Gabriella Peralta, who is, I think, deputy editor of Gibraltar Chronicle. Who knows, she might be able to help. There we are. There's the Midweek Drive doing its bits, this connectivity. And it does sound actually... Anna, whereabouts in London are you at present?
Oh dear, I'm somewhere between Richmond and Hounslow. I missed a bus.
Somewhere between Richmond and Hounslow is presumably just similar to Luke's, somewhere outside Pedro Almodovar's building, basically. But we seem to be having jamming issues and various other bits and pieces. Victoria, any other closing questions for the team you'd like to start throwing into the mix?
I always hate it when you ask these questions because I don't know who to ask, but.
You could ask Bill. Everybody.
Well, yeah, I could ask everybody. But Bill, are you actually excited about all your tennis? Or is it something that you're really not sure about with all these 12-year-old boys bullying you?
The tennis is, on the one hand, it's pretty banal because you're looking at a line and you've got to, there is no gray area. It's either in or it's out. And who the hell cares whether it is actually in or out? Certainly not me, even when it's getting quite steamy towards the end of a final. But on the other hand, you do get an hour on, an hour off, and you do get to talk to all the other umpires, and you hear all their surreal stories. And so that is the best bit about it, talking to all these other weird cats. I've only just started. I'm a novice. But some of them have been doing it for 30 years. And it's an amazing community. It's almost care in the community. A lot of them, it's their sort of lives. It's where they get to see all their friends and chat away and occasionally call it ball in or out.
Yes, I'm really not sure whether you're going to get onto the Wimbledon shortlist with that particular attitude, William. Who the hell cares whether it's in or out? I mean, there's a lot of wealthy tennis players who may be a lot less wealthy just on the basis of that thing alone, really. So, you know, just be careful. Now, will there be a novel coming out of this? I mean, is this deep cover research for a novel about tennis umpires?
Yeah, obviously. Everyone is dying to hear what it's like for a tennis linesman. Yes, it's got a bestseller written all over it.
I mean, Luke, ever considered writing a composition to actually deal with, a Stravinsky-esque approach to being a linesman in tennis?
You know, there's something there that never ever crossed my mind. But I think there's something quite unique about it. Why not? It could totally work. Why always correlate music with Ponzi? You know, subject matters, it could well be sports. Why not?
There we are, you see. This could be a sort of interconnective sort of thing put into its whole thing. Luke, how do people actually catch up with this movie if they can't get to Toronto, if they can't get to Glasgow next year? Is it going to be available online? What's the process of accessing details about your latest work?
I'll be very glad to share it with you once we finish a second round of recordings. And at that point, it will be streaming like any other product. So it will be video on demand. Other than that, it's pretty much an experience that started and should end as a live experience on stage, as an event. And sort of exist during that lapse of time, those 90 minutes, and then go and leave you with a pleasant feel.
Exactly. And I mean, clearly, you obviously very deeply concerned about Ukraine. Do you feel as though we're getting some kind of sense about that? Or is it just a case of it's never ending? It just seems to be going on and on and on and on.
It will continue to develop and get worse. I'm actually going to Ukraine in about 10 days' time. I will be there for 2 or 3 weeks. We can talk when I'm there, but I'm not hearing nothing positive. There's no improvement. And I'll tell you more when I'm there, but we should connect.
Yeah, absolutely. Jessica, it falls to your good self before we go to hear There's Still a Long Way to Go by Victoria Simmons. Would you like to effectively throw the last two questions to the various folk on the call today?
Yes, I would love to. So have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today? We'll start with Luke.
Well, absolutely. I love joining you guys. I mean, Alex is one of my favorite people. So that's a yes, 100%.
Excellent. Victoria?
Of course. I love hearing about Luke's music. That's just amazing.
And to be fair, Luke, Victoria was devastated. We could only fit you in for 8 or 9 minutes last week, which is why we're delighted you were able to come back for a more fulsome connection this week, even though our Almodovar was really trying to jam the signal. Just like that, you
with
see.
With the hairdo. You know, it's got very thick hairdo.
Yeah. And who to next, Jessica?
Next on my screen, Chloe.
Oh, I've loved it. Thank you for having me. And Luke, keep going. You're doing awesome. And I hope the festival goes really well as well tomorrow. Did you say it was tomorrow? I hope it does awesome.
Or depending on when you're listening to this on Siren Radio, it may well be it's already passed. It all depends. It's just the way the midweek drive goes out in terms of that. Anna, good for you.
Yes, I would love to be here next week, and I hope you won't be in transit. So everyone else have a fantastic week, and I look forward to seeing you all next week.
Exactly. Travelling on public transport in Transport for London is a very brave thing to do at the best of times, and Anna's actually doing that courtesy of the Midweek Drive. Bill, has it been good for you?
I've loved it. Thank you so much for having me. Please may I come on next week?
Of course, that pretty much is a wrap, I think, from our perspective. Jessica, have you had a reasonably interesting time from North Carolina?
Yes, as always.
Marvellous. And I take it you'll be back very shortly.
Yes.
There you are. Jessica Burtis, Victoria Simmons, William Coles, Chloe Rose, Luke Carradine, Anna Lewis, and, of course, just yourself, dear listener. Keep on keeping on. Victoria, come on, it's time for you to introduce your own piece of music again. Still a long way to go. Over to you, please.
Okay, this is my new-ish song that came out in May. Still a long way to go.
Consider
So, did you get out of the right side of the bed this morning? Or is it a case of another day, another disaster, or another challenge? Well, you're not alone in terms of that. Many people would like to change their particular first day routines. I personally like to always start off with a thought of gratitude just for actually sort of being around for another day. But somebody who can actually talk about this particular impact in terms of Alpro's research and how maybe you can actually avoid that notion of sleepwalking through the whole of the day is indeed actress, comedian extraordinaire. It's Ellie Taylor. How are you, Ellie?
Oh, I better now I've been described as an extraordinaire. Thank you.
Well, you definitely are. And you've literally got well into this whole process because, you know, this notion of if you start off badly, the rest of the day probably is going to be on a downward trend as well, is a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it?
You're probably right to some extent. Yeah. And millions of Brits, I think, feel that way. I think they start the day off on the wrong foot, whether it's getting up late, rushing around, you know, missing your bus, jumping on your phone before you've even been for a wee. I mean, just doom scrolling before you've had breakfast is no way to start your day in a positive way, is it?
It's challenging because obviously there is that notion of, I suppose, good intentions. Make sure you get all your things packed the night before so you know everything that's sort of set and ready to actually go for that. And again, avoiding that notion of basically not being organised.
Absolutely. I think organisation is key. But I think sometimes maybe we're too organised in that. I think the mundanity around breakfast really upsets me when I read the stats on it. So on average, this Alpro research found that we have the same breakfast 203 times a year, which is so dull, isn't it? And 44% of us would like to shake things up. So I think it's so important sometimes to, while being organised and packing your bag is lovely, but sometimes think outside the box, try a new different cereal, do something that is going to make you a little bit more mindful, a little bit more thoughtful about what you're doing in the morning. And I think those little things occasionally can really help sort of send your day in the right direction.
Yeah, 2/3 of us think there's something that stops them from actually varying what they have for breakfast each day. I mean, how far should you actually go? Should you switch it up and maybe actually, I don't know, start off with a tuna fish sandwich for the day, for instance, as opposed to an Alpro side of things?
That sounds horrific, but each to their own. Not for me, thank you. But I think when I always think I make my daughter, my little girl, get something delicious for breakfast, and I just sort of throw myself a crust occasionally. So when I do actually mindfully put something together and take time, and you know, it's such a buzzword, isn't it? A buzz phrase to say self-care. But I think if you can just give yourself a little bit more respect and treat yourself nicely and kindly and prepare something that you think's delicious that might be a little bit new for you, then that's going to put you in a better mood.
Now, Ellie, you have a variety and a smorgasbord of employment areas that you've worked within, from the Strictly, from the whole range of comedic side of things, etc. Do you actually change your breakfast depending on the job that you're working in?
Well, sometimes I suppose I do, because if I'm jumping in a car quickly and getting there, I'll have something on set, which is usually far more elaborate than I'd have at home. It would be, you know, there's avocado first thing. I never have avocado first thing. Whereas usually at home it is some kind of cereal based thing going on. My daughter is also obsessed with breakfast. It sort of runs in the family to be obsessed with breakfast. So we're quite good little mates with that. Like, part of her Christmas present and birthday present will always be something yummy and cereal based.
Is it the most important meal of the day? I mean, it's often said that it was the most important meal of the day. There's been a bit of controversy over that in recent years. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know about scientifically, but I think for me personally, I find it is. I cannot get on board with people who don't have a breakfast or don't have their breakfast till midday. I'm up and I've eaten my breakfast within about 10 minutes of opening my eyes. I just think it's the best thing. You get to eat. All you've had to do is fall asleep, wake up, and then you get to eat something delicious. I mean, it's the best meal of the day from that point of view.
And thoughts for the nearly 1/3 of the country who basically have admitted in this survey by Alpro that they've got into negative habits that they just can't seem to break away from. What's the Ellie Taylor solution?
The Ellie Taylor solution, I would say, and I need to listen to my own advice here, but it is, like I've said, just trying to be a little bit more thoughtful about how we spend that time in the morning and not just sort of going through the motions, but thinking about what we're doing. Thinking about what we're consuming, whether that's food or media, you know, choosing what we want to, curating our mornings a little bit better to try and make us the best version of ourselves for the rest of the day.
I like that notion, curating the morning from that point of view.
Well, sound how wise, actually, don't I?
Yeah, well, profound, as we said. I mean, this is the key thing. In fact, the wisdom of Ellie Taylor, I'm sure, will be a series that'll be in the offing in the not too distant future. Are there any other ways in which people can actually sort of follow this, dig deeper into the ALPRO research? Where would you point them, Ellie?
Yeah, I'd head to the ALPRO website. There's loads of ideas on recipes and different ways you can sort of uplift your morning routine. And we're doing a couple of breakfast clubs in London and Manchester in September where you can come along. I'll be there doing some stand-up. There'll be a chef. There'll be a ALPRO barista. There'll be a breakfast feast. So it'll be a lovely way to do exactly what we've been talking about, which is shift things around, change things up, put some variety back on the menu.
And how can people follow yourself, Ellie? Are you around on most of the socials, including perhaps these days X?
I suppose I am on X by default because I just haven't come off Twitter. Yes, I'm knocking around exactly where you would think you would find me. I'm there being an idiot.
Entertainment Today, ET, Ellie Taylor, it's one and the same, basically. That's the classic line. Ellie, it's been awesome connecting with your good self today. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us? Has it been really a relatively refreshing start to the day for yourself?
I feel reinvigorated. It's like I've done a wild swim, but through my ears.
Well, there you go. Ellie Taylor, we salute you. Take care. And hopefully we'll speak again in the not too distant future. Take care now.
Thank you.